Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. Now, I have a great program for you today. Have you ever felt like you weren't good at relationships? Or maybe you've had multiple long-term relationships, and rather than seeing your breakups as ordinary or even positive, you've believed that this was a personal flaw. Now, my guest today is Dr. Jan Dworkin. She argues that we need to lean into the idea of relationships as a place where mistakes are not just inevitable, but necessary. Jan is a therapist for individuals and couples with over 25 years of experience. She also founded the Process Work Institute, a graduate school dedicated to process-oriented psychology. She is also the author of a new book available on Amazon November 1st called Make Love Better: How to Own Your Story, Connect with Your Partner, and Deepen Your Relationship Practice. For more information about Jan or her book, go to jandworkin.com. So welcome to the program, Jan. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Terry. It's wonderful to be here.
Yes, it is wonderful to talk to you, and I love the topic today. But before we discuss the book, can you first briefly tell us what process work is and how that's important in therapy or counseling?
Sure. Well, process work was originally developed as a therapeutic modality in the 1970s and 80s by then Jungian analyst and physicist Dr. Arnold Mindell. But today it's more often described as an awareness practice or a facilitation practice. And it has applications, broad applications in psychotherapy, coaching, conflict resolution, even complementary medicine, large group work, and social transformation. But all of these various applications of process work rest on the idea that we value what is central and known with any individual, group, or organization, but also we really take a look at what's marginal and disavowed and rejected. And the things that are disavowed and rejected and unwanted hold keys to the growth and evolution of any system. And that's whether it's an individual, a couple, or a community.
And so what would an example be? Is that like focusing on my emotions, or?
It could be focusing on unwanted emotions within an individual. Like, I'm a peaceful person, I'm not aggressive. Mm-hmm. And the aggressive part of yourself, you disavow or you discard. But within that so-called aggression, there's all sorts of power and creativity and unexpressed needs. So if you look at the things in an individual that they reject, then you find it's like there's gold in the garbage, but you have to really bring the right attitude to the things that are difficult or painful and explore them and unfold them. The same is true within couples. For example, couples that are having problems, for example, a lot of conflict, or if they're having problems in their sex life, if you really look at the details of the things that disturb couples, you find all sorts of information that you didn't know was there.
That is good. And I bet you it is powerful in the counseling situation as well. Mm-hmm. So now let's get to your book and see not only how process work might be relevant to that, but first, what motivated you to write the book, Make Love Better?
Thank you for asking. This yes. book has been cooking inside of me and sort of knocking on the door of my heart and my brain for several decades. And it's one of those things that just had to be written. I just didn't know how I would do it and when I would do it and when I would be ready to do it. because I've been studying myself and studying myself in relationship and studying other people's relationships my whole life, really.
And keeping journals and trying to,
thank you. Yeah, I was keeping journals, trying to make sense of the things that were happening to me and disturbing me in relationship. I found my way into becoming a couples counselor, and it's, relationships have always fascinated me. So I wanted to write about the things that I was learning. And I also wanted to write about myself because I felt the experiences I was going through could be helpful also to other people. But so I tried several versions of the book. I wrote a memoir at one point. At another point, I wrote what I consider to be like an academic treatise. It turns out I was just trying to prove to the world how smart I was. It wasn't really what I actually wanted to put out there in the end. Mm-hmm. But what ultimately drove this version of the book and the book that I currently wrote was coming through an extremely difficult period of my own personal life and a very horrible breakup from an abusive relationship while I was in my mid-40s. And going through this experience, I felt so alone and isolated in my own experiences of being a successful professional and a therapist with a great career and great friends, but ultimately having this profound internal sense of failure. Mm-hmm. By that point, I'd been through two long-term relationships, and then I found myself single again, and it was just not again. And I wasn't seeing the people around me weren't talking about this. The people around me didn't seem to be experiencing the same degree of drama and shame and self-loathing that I was experiencing. And I felt like I felt so alone, but I felt like I couldn't possibly really be alone. So in a way, I wrote the book for myself because I feel like I needed to read that book. I don't know if you're familiar with that Toni Morrison quote, if there's a book you want to read and it hasn't been written yet, then you have to write it.
Right. And I like that. First of all, I love the idea that you use probably process work, right? You wanted to discard the shame, discard the failure and the mistakes, but you brought it into your life, shared it with us, your experience in this book, Make Love Better, but also such a message and such a learning tool for other people. Now, I know that you write in your book and you argue that we can learn from our failures or we can turn our mistakes into gold, right?
Right.
Now, I have to say, you know, if listeners are out there, they're probably hearing that, Jan, and saying, no way. I don't want to deal with the past. I don't want to deal with what I want to discard and what's difficult.
Right.
I want to forget about it in order to move forward. So help listeners understand, how can we learn from our failures and how do we do that?
Right. It's tricky and it's very, very difficult. And to anybody who says, let's forget about the past and just move on and get past it, if you can succeed at that, great. But you're probably one of the few, because most of us tend to repeat our experiences and we repeat our relationship experiences. And we do this not because we're neurotic or undeveloped, but because our experiences are trying to come to our attention again and again so that we can learn from them and so that we can develop new skills and learn how to handle them differently. It's like a form of amplification, like something is just trying to get your attention. So for example, like if you continue to choose partners who cross your boundaries in some way, mm-hmm. and suppose you're a very open and generous person and you choose partners who take advantage of your generosity. And perhaps you keep having relationships where you feel taken from, or you feel like you give too much, and then you end that relationship, or you don't end it, it ends. And then you repeat that again in another relationship. Why? You know? So you're presented, the reason is because, at least what I think, is that you're presented with the opportunity to do it differently. You're presented with the opportunity to learn something, and then you can redo the scene. And until you can become the director of that scene and act the role in the way that you want to play it and play the scene in a new way, then you can't really move on.
Mm-hmm. And so, basically, what you're saying, Jan, then is listeners out there hear this, that we are going to repeat our relationship experiences and they're going to keep being opportunities for us to learn and change and do it differently. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I'm saying some people can maybe do that as an intellectual exercise and just tell them that they're going to do it differently. Tell themselves that they're going to do it differently next time. But most of us need to actually practice.
Right.
We need to get in there again, try new skills, try to do it differently, develop new neural pathways, really, really deliberately try to go to those places that are really difficult for us, where we feel uncomfortable and we're stretching ourselves, and show up in a different kind of way.
So how do we do that? Can you give us a few strategies that you could share with us today about how can we show up differently? How can we not repeat the same patterns again and again?
Well, one thing is that we have to study ourselves.
Okay.
And we have to get to know ourselves. And we have to understand where our patterns are coming from. So, for example, if we're getting into situations where, for example, we're overgiving somebody who feels they're too generous and they're always being taken from. So you can't just flip a switch and change that. You have to understand why you're behaving that way. Is it because you were a caretaker in your family of origin and that's how you got your sense of self-esteem and love? Is it to do with your personal history, or is it something to do with your social history and your social oppression? If you're a woman, is it to do with your female socialization and the idea that you're only of value if you can give or provide something for others or take care of other people? You know, you have to really get to know yourself and get to know your story and all the components that created your story. And then you can also figure out how to work with it and change it, get support, therapy, self-awareness.
And if I wanted to do that on my own, Jan, I know you said something about journaling and writing mm-hmm. things down. Would that be an appropriate and a good way to get to know my own story, my own relationship patterns?
It depends on who you are and if you're able to. Some people can do that, but some people have a lot of trouble getting out of their own sort of self-limiting belief systems. Mm-hmm. So you could journal. I have spent many years journaling. It's funny, and I know many people have this experience of going back to their old journals and seeing year after year after year, they wrote the same things. Mm-hmm. And they were never able to really get that outside perspective and get outside of themselves. So, you know, if you can do it on your own and you can develop an outside perspective and you can interrupt your story and give yourself advice about how you can do something differently and then try it and succeed, that's great. But a lot of people need help with that.
And so if you do need help, are you suggesting we go to a therapist or a counselor? Can I go to a friend or a family
Absolutely.
Member?
Absolutely. A therapist, a counselor, a friend, somebody who just has who has an outside perspective on you, I think is very, very helpful. Yes.
Now, I know you said, Jan, that you wrote this book for yourself as well. And when I read the book, I was amazed at how vulnerable and personal you are in your book. You share your story so well and so openly. Can you give listeners one important lesson that you learned over time from your past?
Absolutely. I can try. I mean, there's so many things that I've learned. It's hard to pick one. I think one thing that has been important to me is that I've had a tendency in my past to try to sort of mold my partners to fit my dream of who I want them to be. It's another thing I think is a pretty common practice yeah. in relationships. Yeah. And I've learned that the dream of what I want in relationship is really important and is something that I should hold on to. But there's a difference between my dream and who the other person is. Mm-hmm. And learning how to discern and differentiate between my highest dream or my highest hope for what love could be or what I want a relationship to be and who the other person is mm-hmm. crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I should let go of my dream, but it's that if the other person really isn't fitting my dream, I have to come to some hard decisions as opposed to trying to use control or criticism as strategies for me to get my dream.
Mm-hmm. What a really good lesson. Absolutely, it makes sense, Jan. And I think mm-hmm. many people, as you said, do have that in relationships, that process going on where we want to change others to fit our dream. And I really liked that you said, I don't have to give up, or listeners don't have to give up the dream. We just have to be aware when it's happening, and then we have some hard decisions. Do we sit down and talk to our partner about our dream and about the difference or the gap between what they are and our dream, or do mm-hmm. we leave the relationship because it's not possible?
That's an absolutely important practice, a partnership practice, a connecting practice. I talk in my book about owning practices, connecting practices, and deepening practices. And a very important practice with your partner is to sit down and be able to, first of all, discern and know what your dream is, because many people's dreams, deepest dreams for what they want out of partnership are very, very unconscious. They're buried. So first bringing it to the surface yourself, and then to sharing those dreams with your partner and finding out if they fit or not. If one person's dream is for a really close and connected experience of oneness, and the other person's dream is for ultimate freedom and permission to be themselves, those dreams may not necessarily match.
Exactly. You know, I was just working with a client, Jan, a couple where this was so evident. The male, in fact, in this opposite sex heterosexual relationship, wanted closeness and connection and physical touch and time mm-hmm. spent with one another. And the mm-hmm. female wanted independence, wanted not to have touch and physical connection. And so their dreams and their expectations of what relationships and good ideal relationships look like were very different. And in the end, even talking about it and sharing, as you said, that dream, identifying it, sharing it with your partner, they decided that it just wasn't able to be because the dreams were so different.
And I think as a couples therapist, helping couples come to those hard decisions and go to those low points is part of the ethic of what we do. It's not, our job isn't only about helping people stay together.
Right. Right. And that is so hard. When I was first becoming a therapist, Jan, that was the hardest thing for me to realize, because as you've said in your book, you know, the notion of staying together equals success and the notion of not being together equals failure. And so even as a therapist, I incorporated that notion, and it was very important for me as an individual and as a person, but also as a therapist, to recognize that that wasn't the case, that sometimes the best thing for couples and people is not to be together.
It's fascinating. Yeah, it is. I agree. And I share what you're saying. And I've taken some tips from the business world and this whole idea of serial entrepreneurship and writing your failure resume. And some years ago, it was very trendy to go for business people to go to failure conferences where they actually celebrated their failures. But really but the celebration can only really be there if the learning is there.
Right. That and is fascinating. You know? Yes. And I think your book, Make Love Better, is all about that. Celebrating the mistakes Absolutely. And the failures, but then learning and growing from those mistakes. Now, I want to turn back, Jan, to the second part of your book, Connecting Better. Mm-hmm. You talk about being more aware of our body signals as we Yes. communicate with our partners. Can you share some examples of how that's important or how we do that?
Absolutely. I mean, most of us identify almost entirely with the verbal messages that we send and the things that we say. And most of us are less aware of what our body is trying to say or what our nonverbal communication is saying. And bringing that sort of bringing awareness to our nonverbal communication enhances and deepens our communication process with our partner. So, for example, I talk in my book, I give an example of a couple who are the routine of coming together at the end of the day after work. Every couple deals with it, or every family deals with it, when everybody is sort of coming back together again. And these are two men. And when one man is working from home, the other one is has a job outside the home. And when they get together for dinner at the end of the day, one partner is very upset because he accuses the other partner of not making eye contact and sort of shifting his gaze and looking out the window and being kind of spaced out while they're making dinner together. Mm-hmm. And the one who's at home experiencing this, when his partner comes home, feels that his partner doesn't want to connect with him, or is bored with him, or he's not an interesting partner. He takes it very, very personally. And when we actually unfold and explore that signal of being kind of spaced out and looking out the window and not really connecting, it turns out that the guy just needs his introverted time. He's coming home from a very, very busy day, coming straight from one meeting to the next, walk into the door, and his partner immediately wants to relate because his partner has been home, has a less stressful job working from home, is a little bit bored and in need of connection. But the other man who enters the home really just needs time for himself before he even wants to have a conversation about anything. So then, of course, there's a huge misunderstanding and conflict when there actually doesn't need to be one. But if you understand what the meaning of that body symptom signal is, it has nothing to do really with not liking the other person, not wanting to connect, being bored. It just has to do with a need that has been unexpressed.
Right. Right? I love that example. I remember it when I was reading your book, because body signals are so important. And we know studies show, Jan, that if there's a gap or a difference between what you're saying and what you're doing, people read the message of what you're doing, your body signals.
That's absolutely right.
So important for us as partners, whether it be with our child or with our intimate partner or our students or our clients or people we're working with, to really identify and be aware of those body signals. And I love that part of your book. Now, we only have a few minutes left, Jan. It goes by so quickly. If there's one message that you want people to take away from reading your book, what is that message?
One message. Can I give you maybe I have two.
Okay, you can have two in 2 minutes.
I can squeeze them in. One central message in the book is just about learning skills and practice and really developing a relationship practice, meaning that when you need to have a tough conversation with your partner or with your friends or your work colleague, it's like a meditation practice. View it as a sacred space and put a frame on it and say, let's talk and let's bring our best selves to this conversation. Let's see what we could learn from it. So the idea of practice. And the other thing, another message is, I think it's very important for me to talk to also relationships that are in some way marginalized by mainstream culture, because I think that couples who are marginalized in some way by mainstream culture, whether it be because LGBTQ or whether they have big, huge age difference or whether it's an interracial or cross-cultural relationship, you have special challenges and you're a potential change maker in a world that needs you. And that sometimes dealing with these diversity issues in relationship, I believe, can somehow help the world. Because when there's love there and there's motivation to work through diversity issues and to work through difference, or when you really have changes that you can bring to the culture at large, I just want to say, we need you.
We need you. Those are wonderful two messages, Jan. And again, everyone, make love better. So if you want more information about Dr. Jan Dworkin or her new book, again, Make Love Better, available on Amazon on November 1st, you can also go to her website, jandworkin.com. So thank you so much for joining us, Jan. I really enjoyed talking to you, and your messages are powerful and very important.
Thank you very much, Terry. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.